I read this week that the Christmas tree industry was killing it this year. Price spikes and record sales. Insiders say it has something to do with the COVID-19 pandemic. People apparently really want to celebrate the holiday this year. I guess if you can't get close to your family, at least you can go all in for the season. Maybe you find yourself listening to more Christmas music this year for that same reason. Well, the filmmaker Mitchell Kazin doesn't need a pandemic to make him listen to more Christmas music. And it's possible nobody loves Christmas music the way Kazin does. He loves it so much he made a film about it, about his own obsession with this music, but others too. In fact, there's kind of a subculture of Christmas music fanatics, and not just an affection for kitsch. They really, legitimately love the music itself. Now, they all have their reasons. And for Mitchell Kazin, it started when he was 3.
My father was absent a lot, would disappear for days on end. He'd pop in and out, but in those early years, I can't remember him being around much during the holiday season. And the one record out of the handful of Christmas records that my parents had in the stack was a record called The Magic of Christmas with Children by Nat King Cole.
He's the little boy that Santa Claus forgot.
In particular, because of one song. It's called The Little Boy That Santa Claus Forgot.
He sent a note to Santa for some soldiers and a drum.
And in the song, Nat King Cole talks about a young little boy who, because he doesn't have a father in his life, Santa Claus determines that he's not going to come visit this little boy, and he's stuck playing with last year's toys. He's going to be overlooked.
I'm so sorry for that laddie. He hasn't got a daddy. The little boy that Santa Claus forgot.
And when I first heard that, I was terrified. The idea that Santa Claus would pass you by, wouldn't come visit you for nothing that you'd done, I almost couldn't comprehend it. Also on the record, in that song, Nat King Cole has a series of spoken word soliloquies.
You know, Christmas comes but once a year for every girl and boy. The laughter and the joy they find in each brand new toy. I'll tell you of a little boy who lives across the way. This little fellow's Christmas is just another day. He's the little boy that Santa Claus forgot. And goodness knows he didn't want a lot in the street.
And so there was this voice coming out of this machine that I didn't understand was a record player. And somehow he knew that I was the little boy who didn't have a father. And I thought he was singing about me. And I thought that story was about my experience.
He hasn't got a daddy. He hasn't got a daddy. A daddy. A daddy. 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 Daddy.
And I used to ask my mother to play the song over and over again, not realizing it was a recording, hoping that one time the story would change and the little boy's father would come back, my dad would come back, and then I wouldn't have to worry anymore about Santa Claus coming to visit.
You're 3 years old. You're imagining Nat King Cole, however it works in a three-year-old brain, is talking directly to you.
Yes, exactly. I thought he was speaking directly to me, trying to help me figure out what was going on with my mother and father, having Christmas without my dad, and that because of something that I didn't do, it wasn't me, but I was being punished by Santa Claus for some reason, and I just didn't get it.
Yeah. that moment, that experience with the Nat King Cole record, how did that translate later into your obsession with holiday music? What was the connection?
As I grew into my early teens, I was paying attention a lot more to the songs on the radio at Christmas time. They didn't speak to me in that same way that the Nat King Cole song had. I couldn't connect with them emotionally at all. So it wasn't until several years later, and I was in a thrift shop, and I saw this compilation record called Jingle Bell Jazz. And I picked up the record, and I looked through a list of songs, and I recognized Duke Ellington was doing Jingle Bells, and Ella Fitzgerald was doing Christmas Blues. It was the giants of the day. And the very last song on the B-side was a song called Blue Xmas, To Whom It May Concern. And there were two names underneath it, Miles Davis and Bob Dureau. It blew my mind. I hope you have a mind when the body is blue. An extraordinary song with just the hippest, coolest opening with his bongos, Willie Bobo on the bongos. Blue Xmas. Just boom. And it just took off. All the waste, all the sham, all the hate. But it was the lyrics that really grabbed me, because he was being critical about the holiday and talking about it in sincere terms. Lots of hungry, homeless children in your own backyards, while you're very, very busy addressing 20 zillion Christmas cards. Now Yuletide is the season to receive and all to give and all to share. But all you December do-gooders rush around and rant and rave and loudly blare. Merry Christmas. I hope yours is a bright one, but for me, that was the song that finally spoke to me again, just like the Nat King Cole song had. And I thought, man, if this exists, and I just stumbled over it, there's got to be more songs like this in the world. And it's now my job, my passion, to search them out and find them.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're rebroadcasting a conversation we had with the filmmaker Mitchell Kezin. We were talking about his documentary film called Jingle Bell Rocks. It's a film entirely about Christmas music, but also the people and the subculture that collects these obscure songs. They get together, they share music, they make mixtapes. Well, this year, with so much going on, we thought it would be fun to show Kezin's film again as part of our Through the Lens series. This is our partnership with the Utah Film Center. We're going to be screening Jingle Bell Rocks next Tuesday night. This is part of our film series. You can get more details about that on our website, radiowest.org. Mitchell, so we're all thinking about, you know, what effects this COVID pandemic is having and, you know, and may continue to have on these different parts of our lives. So what about Christmas music? Because one of the things that you've said is that you're noticing there have been, you know, there's been a lot of really great new Christmas songs.
Yeah, there have. It's kind of amazing. I didn't expect it to happen. I thought there'd be far fewer, just because I thought people weren't inspired. But I think it's the exact opposite. I think musicians like all of us are having to, I know for myself, this is the first year, aside from when I started making the movie, that I've had to assess what the holiday really means to me at its core, you know? So I think a lot of musicians are in that, have been in that same boat. They've been trapped inside. They're musicians, so what they do is they go to their pen and they write songs and they create music. And they've had to contemplate everything that's changed. You know, I'm a real sap, as you can probably tell. I'm pretty old fashioned, and rituals are really important to me.
Yeah,
and the traditions at Christmas time that we all have are sort of in danger. You know, we can't celebrate with many of our loved ones this year.
Yeah.
So many of the things we know to do, we can't do. I was thinking about this the other day. There's only a few sort of universal global events that people can collectively grasp and understand and experience. One is Christmas for most people, unless, you know, whether sacred or secular.
Yeah.
Unless you're Jewish, of course, or of other religions. And the other thing is a global pandemic. So COVID and Christmas are sort of battling it out together in a way. And we're trying to hang on to as many of those traditions as possible while also staying safe from this virus. And so, like, both of these things are infectious in completely different ways.
Wow.
You know, Christmas and all its magic and the music and the emotion and the joy. You know, some of us are experiencing a lot of pain this year. And there are a lot of songs that were written that address that head on. But so, you know, Christmas is infectious in a positive way. And this COVID-19 pandemic is infectious in a horrific way. And we're just trying to manage both.
You mentioned that some are experiencing pain, of course, this year. And so I wanted to offer, you know, our condolences. I know your brother died recently. And I wanted to ask you about that because you say you're going to rework this year's Christmas Merry Mix, maybe in honor and part, at least for him.
Definitely. My brother, Scott, who would have turned 49 yesterday, passed away on November 30th from lung cancer, diagnosed last February. And folks listening can't see me, but I'm a big guy. I'm 6'8". Brother was almost as big as me, but he was also big as he had the biggest heart of anyone I know, and a big, big laugh, and just a big presence you never, ever forgot. And so I was about 3/4 of the way through finalizing my mix. I had decided this year, since I had more time and I didn't have any other obligations as far as my movie was concerned, just a tiny aside, this is the first year since the film was released in 2014 that I'm not on the road doing something in connection with screenings of the movie. So I got a head start finally this year on my Merry Mix, and which is a compilation of the best 90 minutes worth of songs that I've discovered that through the year. And I put them all together into an 80 minute mix. And it's my audio Christmas card that I send out to friends and family and some fans and two other collectors who I trade with to find the best songs out there. So I had a mix ready, almost finished. And then sadly, my brother took a really bad turn and passed away suddenly on the end of November. So I decided, obviously, that I wanted to dedicate not just the mix, but a song to him. So he was a huge hip-hop fan, so I'm now going through some of my favorite hip-hop songs, trying to determine which one to dedicate to him. It's either Christmas in Hollis, of course, was one of his favorites, but he also loved Christmas Rappin' by Curtis Blow, which surprisingly I've never used before. So I think Christmas Rappin' is the song that will honor him.
So you've been doing this 30 years now.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, a lot of people probably can't believe it. What are you going to do to celebrate the anniversary?
One thing that's going to launch in the next day or two is I've put together a brand new website, mitchellsmerrymix.com, where I'll be showcasing the entire 30-year collection. Every cover and the art and track lists will be available for folks to peruse through and decide if they want to hit me up to have any of those mixes to help themselves through the holiday with some music that might speak more directly to their individual experiences. There's about 25 songs on each mix, roughly. So you do the math. 30 times 25 is 750 songs. So it's really been interesting just sort of looking at the history of this,
I bet,
crazy little obsessive thing I do every year, and seeing how it's evolved and seeing where I started, which is kind of embarrassing now. I look at that first one. It's like a precious little baby, but it's also pretty lame in comparison to last year's. You know, musically speaking, I didn't have a lot of records 30 years ago. Now I have far too many. But
yeah, but they all had that same common element, which is that deep, deep, not just obsession, but affection for this music. And that's been the consistent thing, right?
It has. They all have something unique to say about the holiday. And that's why I bought them. And that's why I've kept them. The ones that don't, I've gotten rid of already. The ones I've hung on to, I could hear them, play them for the rest of my life. And they, you know, they really help me cope with all the emotions that are accompanied with this celebration.
Yeah.
I mean, music is so inextricably linked to the holiday.
Mitchell Kezin, he's the director and producer of the documentary film Jingle Bell Rocks. And as a way to help everyone find some joy this holiday season, we are going to be screening it next Tuesday night. It's a free live stream screening. Mitchell will join us for a live Q&A after the film. So for more details, just go to our website, radiowest.org. We will get started at 7 o'clock. We'll take a break. Come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Independent public service journalism has never been more important than it is right now. KUER helps you make sense of the world, including the world of politics. Even as we're covering the coronavirus situation, our newsroom is also closely watching the races around Utah, like the race for governor. Local politics has a big impact on our everyday lives, and listener support keeps our reporting strong. Make a big impact in your community. Show your support at KUER.org/donate.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're offering a special holiday edition of our documentary series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. We're talking about Mitchell Kezin's documentary. It's called Jingle Bell Rocks. We're going to be hosting a live, free screening of it next Tuesday night. We'll give you more details about that a little bit later. We spoke with Kezin back in 2014. Here's an email from Ben who writes, "As a kid, I grew up listening religiously every Christmas season to the Oak Ridge Boys Christmas album that pretty much everybody else I had ever met just hates. My wife," he says, "can't stand the rocking opener, Jesus is Born Today. But every time," he says, "I hear that album and that cheesy song in particular, I'm transported back to my youth with actual tinsel hanging on the tree and snow on the ground and stockings full of toys." And isn't that the point, Mitchell Kezin, in many ways, that's what the music seems to be about for a lot of people, is that it connects you to something else, connects you to memory.
Absolutely. It was one of the most remarkable things when I was researching the film. I would speak to total strangers about the idea that I had and the movie I wanted to make, and I would ask them about their favorite Christmas song. And they, almost without fail, people who were engaging with the holiday had that one song or that one record that they always had to go to that announced the holiday for them, that was so tied to their childhoods and their memories of Christmas growing up. And without fail, everyone seemed to have one song and revealed so much of themselves, personal anecdotes and shared memories with me that I wouldn't have ever thought possible speaking to a stranger for 5 minutes. It was really something else.
I want to play a clip from the film because among the people that we meet along the way is Wayne Coyne, of course, of the Flaming Lips. He, in this clip, says something. He, along, by the way, I should mention, along with David Wisdom, who is a Canadian radio icon, is how you describe him.
Very much so.
Very much so. He describes how this kind of music is related to ritual and how it transports you back. Let me play another clip from Jingle Bell Rocks. This is David Wisdom and Wayne Coyne.
"People like to hear the same thing at Christmas that they've heard before, because that's what Christmas is about. It's about repeating the same thing. It's about marking the year. It's about traditions. It's about rituals.
We didn't have lots of Christmas records. I think there was a few around the house, you know. But you mostly heard Christmas music at Christmas time. And so you know, the music and the memories and all the experiences are all, you know, they're all combined. So as you get older, you know, you hear a certain Christmas song by Andy Williams and you're transported back in time. It's probably to some joyous thing. And that then that pierces that pathway, you know, it goes directly back. You know, that's what that type of music does.
To remember our childhood, to understand where we came from and why we're here, there's nothing like music for evoking memories of the past.
From Mitchell Kesson's film, Jingle Bell Rocks.
I was just going to mention, you know, you can't envision the holiday without the music or the music without the holiday. It's just
right.
they're so inseparable. And that's kind of unique. There isn't another sort of celebration that has so many songs connected to it that are so integral to the experience of the holiday, in my mind anyway.
Yeah. Well, let me play a clip from Bill Adler, who you include in the film. I think he puts it almost best. Here's another clip, Bill Adler from Mitch Kesson's film.
You know, not to get negative about it, but I think that Christmas for most folks is about tradition. People like what's familiar over and over again. It spells Christmas to them. So, you know, that record, you know, means the same thing to you as, I don't know, a Christmas fruitcake or something. It's a kind of food you wouldn't eat any other time of year, but if they put it in front of you at Christmas, you're going to eat it and you're going to say, wow, my mom used to make something like this.
I think people feel conflicted, don't you think, Mitch, about about it?
Sure.
On one hand, they have strong affections and they love it. On the other hand, some of them hate it. And you don't bypass that part of the film. I mean, that is part of it too, don't you think?
Absolutely. I was conflicted for years and years. I probably was collecting for at least 5-7 years before I shared any of it with anyone. As I say in the movie, I was in the Christmas closet, not feeling comfortable sharing this weird obsession. I thought I was the only one in the world doing it, you know, foolishly. But people have a knee-jerk reaction to the words Christmas music. And that's because most of us aren't aware of the depth and the variety and just how much of it is not ever heard. And I always wondered why that was. I could never figure it out. Mm. I still don't quite figure it out. I can't quite figure it out. But now with, you know, music blogs and, you know, college radio, and there's so many more places where you can find this stuff, it's starting to become a little more, easier to discover it. But that just makes our jobs more challenging.
One of the things you explore in the film is kind of how Christmas music, as we've come to now know it, how it evolved. Christmas songs, of course, and this is one of the things that, you know, a lot of the collectors point out in the film, they're revenue generators for singers, for a lot of them. And you can make good money off of this racket. Maybe I shouldn't put it that way. But, I mean, you can come back to this music every season. So it makes sense for people to, whether they're Christian or whether they're believers at all, you see a lot of people making these kinds of albums. And one of the points that I wanted to ask you about, and you point this out, is that the biggest selling Christmas songs of all time are written by Jewish men. Did you ever figure out why that was? I mean, you do kind of get at that a little bit in the film, but it's pretty interesting, I think.
Oh, it's fascinating. It's actually the subject of a new film I'm starting, the untitled Jews and Christmas movie, because 75% of classic chestnuts, from White Christmas to Silver Bells to you name it, have been written by Jewish songwriters during the era of great, you know, Tin Pan Alley songwriting. And I guess it's because they have, you know, a removed perspective from the holiday, mm-hmm. perhaps a longing. I mean, there's a fascinating book called White Christmas, Story of an American Song, written by a fellow named Jeffrey Rosen. Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful book. I recommend it to anyone, and it's a great Christmas gift, too. He wrote it about 8 years ago. It goes into the whole history of that song and the backstory, which is absolutely fascinating. And Berlin was actually someone who kind of wished he could engage in the holiday and wasn't able to. That was his sort of point of view, among other themes that he wrote about. But getting back to the whole idea of Christmas as a revenue generator, or music, you know, a moneymaker, there was a time back in the 50s and 60s where recording a Christmas album was kind of a musical rite of passage for an artist. You know, Elvis Presley's Christmas record was his fourth or fifth, I think, and you would have to have really established yourself as an artist before the record label would even consider having you create a Christmas album. But when they did come to you, and Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald, this is true to their entire oeuvre, that happened. And it speaks to the quality of the songs that they recorded. Whereas now, I mean, we're back into this singles market where it's anyone with a computer and some skill with a guitar and a good voice can record their own song, mm-hmm. put it up on CD Baby or wherever, and hope that it catches on. But there are literally every year thousands of these being released, and many being released in haste and not very thoughtful and not very done from my perspective for the wrong reasons. And I haven't found anything lately that has even has grabbed me in any way.
Really? Lately, you mean?
Yeah, no, nothing. And, you know, I search and search. It's not only old songs I'm looking for, but I'd love to find some new ones. And
so wait, you kind of get at this actually in the film. I mean, David Wisdom is among them who talks about the fact that you know bad, you know, crappy Christmas music when you hear it, and you know the good stuff. And for him, he said identifying the good stuff was about whether it had a heart, right?
Yes. And there's no irony in it at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's sincere. It's speaking to sort of truths about the holiday. That goes back to what you were asking me earlier. When growing up as a teen and then later, I couldn't identify with the songs I was hearing on the radio because they weren't speaking to my personal experience. There was nothing that I heard that I could connect to. And that bothered me. And I started to kind of resent all the stuff I was hearing on the radio. And that also sort of spurred my obsession with trying to find the stuff that did have an impact on me emotionally or intellectually.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Not to get too serious.
Well, there's a group, but this idea of connecting to it, there's a great section in the film where you talk about this song, Santa Claus is a Black Man. And this is really connected to identity. There's a song about Santa being a brown man, and I'm sure there are other versions of that. But this is the kind of connection part. Tell us a little bit about Akeem and Teddy Van, because this is a song from 1973.
Yes, Teddy Van sadly passed away before I had a chance to meet him and interview him. He was very difficult to locate, as was Akeem, his daughter, who was 5 at the time that this record was recorded. It's a full album, but that one song was the one that sort of became a huge underground cult classic and is played every year now, and was the reason why I visited with John Waters in the movie. He put together his own collection of his favorite, as he referred to them, crackpot Christmas carols.
Right.
They're not all crackpot. Many of them are very, very cool tunes, including Santa Claus is a Black Man, which was written by Teddy Van. And he was a songwriter and an artist who just didn't like the spotlight, and therefore it was a beautiful-looking man, and his label wanted him to become a performer and be on stage and tour, and he just didn't want to have anything to do with it. So his whole career trajectory was rather minimal, and he's not very well known. I think he did receive a Grammy for a Teddy Pendergrass song he wrote, but he was pretty reclusive, and I couldn't find him for years and years. And then I learned about his passing in an obituary, and that's how I found Akeem, his daughter, who we do speak to in the film. And
yeah.
It's a wonderful duet, and it's a song about a little girl who's remarking about how much her daddy looks like Santa. And the whole Black experience of finding an African-American Santa Claus to celebrate the holiday with is a huge theme within that song, and also within the interview with Akeem and her mother in the film. And it's a strange song, but a lovely harmonies in it. And there's I still don't know who the background singer is, but I'd sure like to find out, because she just takes it into the stratosphere with her voice and her vocalizing.
Yeah.
It's a really soulful tune, and as are all the, there's a lot of really cool Kwanzai songs on the record, and it's a album that I wish could be re-released somehow.
Well, let's play a bit of it. Santa Claus is a Black Man, Akeem and Teddy Van. I have to say, my favorite song, I think my favorite song in the film, and I had never heard it before, was a Clarence Reed song from 1974 called Winter Man. And what's great about this—
One of my favorites, too.
Is it? Yeah, because this is Andy Searson, who's in the—he's a collector, plays a prominent role in the film. He's terrific. He finds this piece at a flea market, pays a dime for it. Would you say something about that? Because I wanted to play some of this. I think it's a great song.
It's an amazing tune and one of my favorites too. And I discovered after we, you know, featured that song in the movie and then we secured the rights to it and all the rest, that Clarence Reed is Blowfly. And how he became this, I don't know if your listener, many of your listeners may not know who Blowfly is, and it's too X-rated to talk much about him, but I don't know how it's so sad to me that he ended up as this crazy Blowfly character recording all these really, really nasty X-rated albums, the names of which I couldn't possibly speak about on air. But he's such a gifted songwriter, and his vocalizing is just so powerful. It's just a soulful, bluesy, amazing tune, and I was so happy when Andy referenced that one when we did that interview, and I found the song through him, and I'm looking for more from that period from Clarence's career. But that was early on, and I guess somehow he just didn't get the support, or who knows. I thought about interviewing him in the film, but I knew I'd have to interview him as Blowfly, and I didn't want that character in my movie.
Yeah.
So I just thought, let's just play the song and let people hear that, how good it is. And it's a, as Andy says, it's a stone cold classic.
I hear that cold wind blowing through the limbs and the trees, and as I stare out of my window, I can see the falling of the leaves. Hello, old man Winter, I've been kind of expecting you. I have my woman here beside me, so there's no harm you can do. I feel sorry for the people you catch alone, with no love to call their own, 'cause only love can keep them out of your hands. You mean old winter man. You cold.
That's Clarence Reed, his song Winter Man. We're rebroadcasting our conversation with the filmmaker Mitchell Kezin. He's the director and producer of Jingle Bell Rocks. So next Tuesday evening at 7 o'clock, we're going to be hosting a free live stream screening of this film. This is part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Mitchell Kezin is going to join us for a live Q&A after the film. So to get all the details, just go to our website, radiowest.org. We'll take another break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Hey, it's Christy Miners, executive producer of Radio West. You know, KUER was built for times like these. Public Radio's foundation is made of real journalism, editorial independence, and listener support. That's why your donations to the station are so critical. They not only allow us to continue our public service, but they also help Radio West keep asking those questions you want answered in the coming year. Please show your support today at KUER.org/donate.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now to our conversation with Mitchell Kezin. We're talking about his documentary film, Jingle Bell Rocks. Kezin joined us a few years ago to talk about the film, and we were thinking that we should share it again, this conversation, but also the film. We're going to be screening Jingle Bell Rocks next Tuesday night. This is part of our film series. You can get more details about that on our website, radiowest.org. We spoke with Kezin back in 2014. This caught my eye. I wanted you to maybe say something about that. This is from the band Low? And I'll tell you why it caught my eyes, obviously, or caught my ear anyway, is there's a reference to the fact that there was a really popular EP that they released in 1999, this band, and apropos of the fact that we're in Utah, they're Mormons, or I guess they were anyway.
Oh, they still are.
Still are, okay.
Who were the first independent band to really take Christmas music seriously, and that album that they recorded and released was one of the first that I came across when I started looking for more contemporary Christmas records and songs by bands that I loved. And I was lucky to film them in concert. They re-released the record 3 years ago and did a small West Coast tour, and I met with them in Seattle where they did a show at the Tractor Tavern and recorded the show, and I did some interviews with them. In the movie, you don't hear those interviews. You hear a radio show they did with KCRW instead. But they're very, devoted Mormons and have a really, all their songs are quite spiritual. And their take on Christmas, their most, well-known Christmas song, Just Like Christmas, is not particularly spiritual. But the rest of the songs on the record are, and we featured one called A Long Way Around the Sea, which harkens back to very early Christmas carols.
Yeah. Can I play a moment of that?
Yeah, I'd love that.
Yeah.
Sparhawk, amazing.
So here's another thing that's great about the film, though. So you have songs like this, images like this, and then there's this contrast where we shift gears, and then you start hearing the goofier songs, which I do want to say something about, because the film is a lot about that. And I just wrote down some of the titles. My favorite is Christmas in My Pants. but I want the South to win the war for Christmas. I saw Mommy spanking Santa Claus. Death might be your Santa Claus. Christmas piggy. Santa on a nuclear missile. I mean, there's a lot of goofy stuff out there, too.
Oh, yeah. It's a big part of the holiday, of course. And I couldn't not include the great Dr. Demento in the film. And,
yeah.
If folks buy the DVD, there's a really great extended scene with him that we sadly had to cut from the main feature. But it was wonderful spending time with him. And, you know, there's a place for humor in Christmas music, obviously. And he made me aware of some of those songs, as did some of the other collectors who are featured in the film. And the whole song poem genre, which is where the Heather Noel song Santa Claus Came on a Nuclear Missile comes from, that whole genre is a fascinating world that I knew I needed to touch on in the film. I wanted to have a little balance, you know?
Yeah. And, of course, a big part of this is collectors that you meet along the way. Again, as you say, you were sort of in the closet for a while, and then you found these kindred spirits all throughout the, I guess all throughout North America. I'm sure they're everywhere. But say a little bit more about what it's like when you're looking. What do you know exactly what you're looking for when you wander into an old record shop or a flea market or something like that? Are you looking for something in particular?
Well, up until recently, no. As Andy says in the film, it's about, you know, discovering the unknown, coming across something that you didn't know existed. But there are, over time, as you're collecting records, there are signifiers, you know, that you can kind of zone in on the how small the label is, where the label is from. You know, a lot of these greatest records that I've come across have been recorded by labels, tiny labels in the South or in Tennessee or Arkansas. And so you start to recognize the particular labels, the record labels, or, you know, looking for a song that has something to do with Christmas in it. The words Yuletide or is one that I love, anything that says Yuletide in it. So it's about the combination of the song title, the artist name, and the label itself. And you kind of just, I didn't used to travel with a portable record player. It would have saved me a lot of money, so I do now. But, you know, just digging for those undiscovered treasures is what it's really, is the exciting part of it, and makes those hours fly by, for me anyway. And then I was going to say, there is one record I am trying to find now, and I've discovered it through a DJ here in Cleveland when I was here in March at the film festival. It's a Jimmy McGriff recorded two Christmas albums. This is one of them that I'd never seen before. It's called Christmas Time at the Organ with Jimmy McGriff. And it's a 6-song EP with some really strange little tracks on it. Nothing like it is on his other more well-known record called Christmas with McGriff that's very widely available. This one is a small label, early 60s, and has some crazy titles like Yuletide Ring Ding-a-Ling, but really funky Hammond B3 organ tunes. And that's the one I'm desperately trying to find now. And I don't know a single collector who's ever seen it. It seems my friend Tom Rapa, who I met in March, and he played this at a little pre-party we had for the film. He seems to own the only copy that exists. So I'm one day I hope to find that.
Yeah.
To me, that's my new holy grail.
Yeah, yeah.
Prior to that, it was the Free Design.
We have to mention because it plays a good part in the film. I mean, so mention who this is. This is a group that this particular, and I want to play a little excerpt from this song, Close Your Mouth, It's Christmas, from 1968. And this is when you kind of talk about how these songs are reflections of the time. This comes out as a kind of, this was the 60s, the late 60s, so the war in Vietnam was going on. There was, like there is always, this sense of, a response to commercialism, these kinds of things. So how did the Free Design thing come up?
Well, I first learned about them through Andy Serzan, who turned me on to their very strange, one-sided Christmas album, which, oh man, the whole story is told in the movie, but in a nutshell, Chris Dedrick, the Free Design were a band who had a really brief 5-year period in the late 60s into the early 70s of fame, and they were out of the gate. They were hugely popular and recorded, I think, six or seven albums and just a handful of these Christmas songs. And the Christmas songs themselves were recorded as part of a United Air Force recruitment Christmas LP. And that whole story is incredibly ironic and strange, and how a peace-loving band from the late 60s ended up with their songs on the B-side of a Air Force Army band Christmas record is just a crazy, crazy story, but in and of itself. But the songs themselves by Chris Dedrick, they're a family band, two sisters, two brothers. Again, sadly, Chris Dedrick had passed away of cancer before I had a chance to meet with him. But we do speak with his widow, Moira Dedrick, and his sister, Sandra, who was in the band. And they tell the whole story of how these Christmas songs came to be. But their music is described as sort of Baroque pop or sunshine pop. And they're much more known by musicians than they are fans, although they have a fairly big cult following. A lot of their stuff has been re-released by Light in the Attic Records out of Seattle, thankfully. But these Christmas songs have never, ever been released. And so the estate, the Dedrick estate, were very kind to me and allowed us to use all of the songs in the film. And Close Your Mouth, It's Christmas is probably their most popular and most well-known, which talks kind of about just paying closer attention to those directly around you and keeping your mouth closed and just experiencing the holiday together. And hints at the commercialization of the holiday and what's important about it. And Chris Dedrick is a beautiful lyricist and real deep thinker. And his song Shepherds and Wise Men harkens back to, you know, the early days of the holiday. And are you going to play one of these?
Yeah, too? I want to play Close Your Mouth, It's Christmas.
Okay,
because it is kind of weird. On some level.
It is. Yes, absolutely.
But in the great way. Here it is, the free design. Close Your Mouth, It's Christmas.
Fa la 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 la. Fa la 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 la. Close your mouth except to say, might get something happening. This season has a secret joy that some are missing. We could all find it if we just watch this. Bring your mind and body back from the store. Get to know the people in your house. Like them. Christmas means a million magic things to those who try to let it be its magic self and not a thing they buy. Sit down and sing a happy song and
that's so great. I want to play one more. I want to play a clip from Wayne Coyne again of The Flaming Lips because he's, again, featured in the film. Because he sort of gets at this idea. There's a terrific song, A Change at Christmas, that they did. Say It Isn't So. And he references this in this clip from the film, the idea of that you can change your opinion, because your attitude changes at Christmas, he says. So why can't you do it at other times? Let me just play this clip from Mitchell Kesson's film, Jingle Bell Rocks. There's Wayne Coyne.
You know, that line, say it isn't so, you know, this idea that we all have this change at Christmas. And then the cynical view is, of course, it's just for a moment, then we go back to being our normal selves, you know. If you can do it at Christmas time, why can't you just do it and be that way? You know, why can't you just change? That's just and we see how that's not really a change. You know, it's like it's just an idea that people embrace that don't really change very much at all.
Let me ask you finally, Mitchell Kesson. You say you want the film to come full circle. What do you want to end up in the end?
Well, the goal was to make a feel-good Christmas movie, and I hope that people, you know, not just have their eyes and ears open, but and will be inspired to sort of look a little more broadly at what kind of holiday music is out there. But they also, that they can connect to my story in the film and and that that can resonate with their own Christmas experiences, because, you know, it's not always joyful and wonderful and magical for people. It's a difficult time for many folks, and it was for me for the longest time as a child, even though, you know, it was a two-sided thing. It was magical and lovely, and I know my mother tried to make it that way, and I have fond memories of the holiday, but I also have some really sad memories of not having my father around and you know, part of the family missing from that experience. So I just hope that that people enjoy the movie and can connect with it. And I've come full circle insofar as I'm no longer haunted by the little boy that Santa Claus forgot. The way the film ends was a joyous experience.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for how that turned out.
Mitchell Kazin, he's the director and producer of the documentary film Jingle Bell Rocks. We're going to be hosting a free live stream screening of this film next Tuesday night. This is part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. We'll get started at 7, and we really hope you can find the time to join us. You won't regret it. For all the details, go to our website, radiowest.org. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. We're on Twitter, at Radio West. Our intern is Ivana Martinez, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Christy Miners is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.
Well, maybe there'll be some time.